I'm Dave Baker. This is It's Pronounced Zine. And on this episode, we're going to be doing a Shitty Watchmen roundtable. If you don't know what Shitty Watchmen is, it's the book that me and 10 other cartoonists put together where we took Watchmen and we redrew it page for page, except really shitty. On this episode, I am accompanied by Chuck Kerr, Emily Vo, and Colby Bluth.
Here comes Dave Baker with the show, talking about paper publications you should know. Authors and photographers that are fresh on the scene. Don't be getting twisted.
Twisted.
It's pronounced zine. Zing, zing, zing.
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 I say this at the beginning of every episode. Zing, zing. If you guys would like to wear this, you can.
What,
put it here so you can hear yourself, so that you know when you're far away from the mic or not. I usually don't.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
See, pull your mic closer.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Give me those sultry tones. Yeah, girl. Well, don't you mean...
Herm.
There you go. We're all just herming it up in here.
It's like Coke in little green glass bottles. They don't make it anymore.
Nobody liked my joke on the Facebook Messenger because it was like...
Oh, I didn't read it.
So Rachel was like, I can't go. And then Robert was like, I can't go. And I was like, someone trying to stop us. The Russians must investigate. I thought it was hilarious.
And yeah, I think that it wasn't funny because people's cars were breaking. And they were like, fuck you, Chuck. Stop making jokes. My car's broken.
Was
yeah,
it Robert? Right.
Yeah, Robert's car.
So I'm
yeah.
a jerk. Is basically, I'm just, all right.
Yeah,
fine.
Basically.
I'm sorry.
So this is the Shitty Watchmen Roundtable. Hey! Yeah, if you guys maybe want to go around and introduce yourselves. I feel like everybody knows who I am.
I'll start. My name's Emily. I participated in this thing and with 11 other people.
Yay!
My name's Chuck Kerr. I run Meltthology here at Meltdown Comics, which is a monthly comics jam, collaborative zine night every third Tuesday. And I also worked on Shitty Watchmen.
And I'm Colby Bluth, and I'm one of the artists on Shitty Watchmen, and I also helped put the book together.
And by helped, you mean literally just put the book together and did all of the work.
And all the binding.
Yes. Yeah.
Such an understatement.
Yeah. The book would not exist without you. Period. Today, our good friend, apparently Patton fucking Oswald, saw the book and tweeted about it. And a bunch of people have been sending it to me. Have people been reaching out to you guys over it?
No, nobody reached out to me specifically, except I just, you know, on the group Watchmen watch group chat, group watch.
Yeah, we have a shitty Watchmen group text where we all talk to each other. Yeah.
Neighborhood Watchmen.
Yeah.
Minutemen.
The Minutemen group text.
Yeah. That blew up today. That was pretty fun. I mean, I don't know. It's just really fun. It's a really surreal, funny thing. Like... Do you want to talk about what it is and how it came to be and all this stuff?
Should I do that? I don't know. I feel like I'm always... part of me is like I'm kind of the de facto shitty watchman in chief, so I kind of do all the talking. And then part of me is like, yeah, but normally I'm the one talking, so maybe you guys talk this time because I want everybody to get credit equally. Like, we all did this together.
That's true.
I guess we can talk about, why we decided to jump on the project.
I still don't know.
I wasn't doing anything better.
It was late night at a party, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad idea that was actually followed up on.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah
we were at our mutual friend Jamie's house. Was it somebody's birthday or New Year's?
I'm going to guess New Year's.
I think it was New Year's. Yeah, so it was New Year's, and a couple weeks prior to that, Nicole had just read Watchmen for the first time and was talking about how...
Hi, Nicole.
Yeah.
The obligatory shout-out of, like, I make comics with Nicole. She's really good.
She's pretty good.
She's all right, or whatever.
Amazing.
She's so good.
Hey, she's all right.
She's so good. She had just read Watchmen a couple weeks previous, and we had been talking about the book and how amazing it is, and specifically how amazing Dave Gibbons' compositions are. And then at the party, it became this running gag of how even if we had redrawn the book terrible, it would still communicate what it is because his compositions are so strong.
Yeah,
that's true. It's
also swag. I feel like you were.
There's a hidden swag in the book.
Is there?
Oh yeah, you gotta. I'm not gonna tell you where it is.
Yeah, at the party, you just kept saying that every word balloon should be replaced with swag. And
well, that's because
like...
because I had just introduced somebody to Lil B. Somebody. Every new person, I'm like, oh, you don't know Lil B? You don't know the song Ellen DeGeneres? Let me play it for you. It's kind of the best song ever recorded. So, are you fist bumping Aristotle because you like Lil B? Okay, he's throwing his hands up in some other expression of confusion. Lil B, though, Ellen DeGeneres, great song. Swag, so good. Takes me back to my youth. Soda fountains and
I just have a visual memory of you in the party miming Blake mowing down Viet Cong with that flamethrower yelling swag.
See, all right.
That's my memory of the party. It was swag, swag. And I was like, Chuck, but those Viet Cong people are humans. And you were like, swag, swag.
See this, and again, when I earlier was like, why did you do, I don't remember why I got involved in this, but I was there and I said I would do it. And then I got a follow up like, hey, so we're doing this. And I was like, yeah, what? Okay, we're doing this. I was like, yeah, you know, it was a good party. Good party.
Yeah, good party. And then a couple weeks later, I kind of sent frantic text messages to everyone and was like, we're going to do this. Hey, you want to do this? And then maybe a couple weeks later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later.
I think it was just 2 weeks.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fast.
It all happened pretty fast, yeah.
Yep.
So 2 weeks later, then we went to Malachi Ward, his studio. If you haven't read Ancestor, you should.
I just read it.
Isn't it great?
It's very good.
It's fucking awesome. Him and Matt Sheenan make a book about, I don't even know how to, this, the end of human existence, but through the internet, I don't know how to explain it. It's amazing.
It went places I was not thinking it was going to go. I'll say that. No spoilers. Real cool book.
Real, real cool book.
It's on Image Comics?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, the little indie label called Image Comics.
Cool book.
Yeah.
Cool dudes.
And we all know each other through Meltthology, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, Emily, I know you.
Yeah, from Long Beach Zine Fest, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was, like, drawing shitty comics then, too.
As we all still are.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, dude, that girl draws like shit. I should get her on this project.
Oh, no.
That was basically what it was, and then a beautiful friendship formed.
Yeah, I was like, who draws the shittiest? What's up, Emily? What's up?
Chick.
What's up, Emily? Which is not true. She's being self-deprecating. She's amazing.
Hey.
Swag.
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 What was the first time you guys read Watchmen?
I don't recall. Not when it came
out. Colby's never read it.
Yeah, no, it was probably in the late 80s, early 90s. I think I probably borrowed it from the library. Was probably, especially at that time, one of the few graphic novels or any type of comic book that they would have had.
Right.
And I think the book probably even smelled a bit funky, which probably just added to
of course,
atmosphere of Watchmen. And yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
It really smells like alien invasion.
By the end. Yeah.
It smells like Rorschach's apartment.
Why does this smell like beans?
Human beings. Anyway, never mind.
Human beings.
I don't know what that means, but I'm into it.
Kidneys. Yeah. It smells like kidneys.
Yeah, what about you, Emily? What was the first time you read it? Or how did you encounter it?
Well, I'm a part of that generation that saw the Zack Snyder movie first.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's, I know, right?
It's actually not an adaptation of Watchmen. It's an adaptation of shitty Watchmen.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, did anyone else look at the replies to Patton Oswalt today? They were
funny.
All about Zack Snyder and how shitty that movie is, which is awesome.
Some really sick burns
funny.
In there.
It was great.
It was hilarious. But no, yeah. So I watched the movie and I was like, wow, these characters have so much potential. I wonder what the source was. And that's how I read
these characters
Watchmen.
Probably have more than just the one dimension. I wonder.
I was like, wow, this is like kind of a nightmare, but for some reason I dig it. So I like read the book instead. And, you know,
good.
Surprise, I like the book way better than the fucking movie.
Good.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you're,
that was
you're
me.
A woman of consummate taste.
Thank you.
I think I read it in junior high. Mm. So most of it went over my head, probably. Like, when I say most of it, I mean, like, the actual, like, incredibly high level of craft and artistry and technique and just literary wow stuff that they're doing constantly on every page. At first it was like, wow, what a cool murder mystery with a really weird twist. And then it was like, oh, just, you know, then it was like, oh, what a, this is a comment on superheroes and like comic books itself. Like, they're using the form to comment on the form. Oh, that's interesting. And then it's like every other thing that, that it is so many things. It's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, junior high, that would have been it. I think I would have picked it up at a Walden Books. I got the cover that had the broken window with the blood and the smiley face sort of falling in the distance, which I don't have anymore because I lent it to someone and it's gone forever.
Damn you, that someone.
Bums me. Yeah, it bums me out, yeah. I have my copy. I picked up a copy. I was in London and I went to Forbidden Planet for the first time, which is an amazing meltdown-like store in London. And they had a signed copy by Dave Gibbons, And I wasn't going to buy it. And then before I left, I was like, I need this. I need to buy this. And I'm glad I did, because now that's the book that I have, because I don't know what happened to the other one. but yeah.
I read it first in freshman year of high school, I think. And same thing as you, where like I kind of didn't get it. I was like, this is cool, I guess. I don't understand why everyone's losing their shit over it. And then I got to the end, and the ending is what I like kind of congealed the whole story, but I still didn't understand the formal side of, you know, the nine-panel grid and the visual motifs that are recurring and the visual commentaries on society and on the comic book medium itself. Like, I didn't get any of that stuff until I read it towards the end of high school or college or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because I read Watchmen pretty young too, so around that time, like high school, and I remember opening it for the first time and then just like, you know, kind of like flipping through it like an animation book, and I was, the nine panel grid was the first, that was the first time I saw like the nine panel grid, and I was like, oh, there's like not really a lot of moving things in here. But then, you know, because then I was like a high schooler and my attention span was just so short. And I was just like, oh, where's the sparkly stuff? Where's like the cool stuff?
Where's the
like,
splash page?
I know.
So
I totally get it. Yeah. Well, this isn't even full bleed.
I will admit, I don't even think I read the interstitials until my second or third time trying to read the whole thing. I think the first time, I think I just read the comic parts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you read the interstitials later and you're like, you know what I mean?
I didn't read it like a
book. I kind of treated it like a trade paperback. And it's like, oh, they threw all these extras in there.
Yeah.
Except the extras are a vital part of the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, they weren't special features like a DVD. It was like, this is...
And there's actual narrative threads that go through those.
Yeah, totally.
And pay off at the end. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the any of the Night Owl 1 stuff means so much less if you haven't read the first three chapters of Under the Hood.
Yeah.
Like, you get to his whole everything, backstory, everything. It's so when, you know, spoilers, what happens to him happens to him, it feels a lot worse.
Yeah.
I can actually remember that was one of the first times reading a comic made me feel like gross, like I'd watched something horrible, and it like gave me like this emotional sick feeling in my stomach, like ugh, this guy was so like cool and decent, and then, you know.
Well, I remember
spoilers.
I remember it might have even been at that party you and I were talking about Watchmen and how amazing everything about it is and how it's like. Oh, no, it was later because I had said something on Facebook that was like, I'd been reading a bunch of these Alan Moore interviews, and he had said that no comic that had been put out since Watchmen had come even close to being as good. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do think that nothing that's been put out since has come close to being as complex. Mm-hmm. And being good and complex are not the same thing. But I can't think of anything that's come out that is as complex as Watchmen. And you and I were talking about that, Chuck, and you had said something about how it was the first time that you really connected something because it was well executed, and then you read other comics, and you're like, why isn't this as well done?
Pretty much. It kind of ruined comics for me for a little bit. Like, it, I didn't that. Ruin them, but it, all you see, or you start to just see, like, everything starts to, like, you know, you could be a really fast runner, and then Usain Bolt's like, whatever, psh, he's running faster than everyone, and you're not that fast anymore.
Yeah.
So you could be like, you know, even the comics that I loved, and then you read, you know, Usain Bolt, and it's like, all right, well, now everything looks really slow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just kind of how it is. Yeah. And that's not a knock on any particular books. It's just kind of, that's just how good it is. It's like, all right, well, is no one going to come and try something? I mean, to be honest, though, the other thing, too, I think stylistically it was so specific that anybody who tries to do that now is just like, oh, you're trying to, you know, it's very Watchmen-esque. Like, it's been done. You did it. So that maybe somebody's going to try to find some other fork off the river to, like, navigate and make their own kind of
like shitty Watchmen.
Sure, yeah, like it's a muddy creek with rocks.
We went the entire other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, what if we just made the worst possible version of the best comic ever?
Right, we're just paddling upstream.
I know.
Just like, go.
Well, it's crazy because it's not just, you know, the written subtext, you know, that Alan Moore has put in there, but also the visual subtext, which I don't know if that was partially planned out by Moore.
Even if it was planned out by him, which I think a lot of it was, executing that that's insane.
Yeah, it's a beautifully illustrated book. It almost just seems like it's from another era when maybe you were paid better or something. I just can't imagine somebody putting in
or
that
you
effort.
Imagine the rights are going to revert back to you after a certain amount of time.
If that was even a motivation, I don't know.
I'm sure it was.
I mean, I think it's probably
so. Chuck, you made an illusion right there. what was that illusion to? Do Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons not own the rights to Watchmen?
They don't.
Oh,
Dave.
but it's work for DC, so I just assume that it's a work for hire book.
You'll probably be able to correct me if I'm wrong. However, I'm pretty sure that, you know, it was a sort of new contract that stated that, you know, once Watchmen went out of print, the rights would revert back to Mr. Moore and Mr. Gibbons. And DC had no intention of ever putting that book out of print. Therefore, some 30-odd years later, it's still in print. There are films. There's ancillary comics that they also said they would never put out, but they have. And now the Watchmen are coming back in some shape or form into regular old whatever comics.
Yeah, the DC universe, yeah.
Therefore, you know, is besmirch the word? Like, you know, the reputation, the legacy heavily besmirched. It feels weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, I don't know. It's like you wouldn't, you know, I keep thinking about, like, it would be like if somebody wrote a book like, okay, somebody's like, you know, I really want to explore the Catcher in the Rye universe. And make
what
a
if
book.
We made, what if we made a book, you know, about, like, what if Holden Caulfield as an embryo?
Right. Or what if we made, you know, all right, check it out. It's Holden Caulfield as an old man. It's an old man Holden, and he's, you know, still, is he still cranky and weird? I don't know. Is everyone still a phony? I don't know, but I'm going to, you know, it's not like it's a book.
It's
like
called Holding On.
Yeah. Holding On. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's weird because it is a product technically, but it's not like, it's not, you know, it feels like one of those kinds of things. Like you wouldn't just spin it off like you wouldn't spin off a novel. Like you wouldn't make, well, I guess they did make To Kill a Mockingbird too, never mind. So
we're in a generation of like spin-offs.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's just gonna keep happening.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know, I don't know, nothing sacred, everyone give up. I don't know, it's just,
guys, Citizen Kane 2, Electric Boogaloo.
There you go,
just saying.
If you do any of them well, that's all that matters, and they're generally never done well.
No, ever.
No.
No, but it's like...
But it's also different, too, because we're talking about things that are, like, not owned by the... Like, for specifically movies. Like, John Carpenter doesn't own Halloween, so he doesn't... granted, he didn't want any of those movies to be made, but he went in and was paid handsomely for doing the book that... Or doing the movie, and then it was this weird overnight success, right?
Sure.
Or not overnight, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas the Watchmen thing was like, hey, John Carpenter, you're going to own Halloween. Actually, you won't own Halloween, and we're going to make 7 sequels without your consent. Go fuck yourself.
It's definitely weird. It's one of those, like, you know, because again, like when I think of Watchmen, I think of, you know, besides Shitty Watchmen, which is awesome. There's
which you can find now on the internet.
You can't separate Dave Gibbons or Alan Moore from it. Yeah. To me, in my eyes, in my head, you know, they all those characters look exactly the way Gibbons draws them. Mm-hmm. If someone else draws them, they don't look right. They're not correct. If you change the outfit of somebody, no, that doesn't work either. It's I don't care how good, who drew them? Andy Kubert, did he do one?
No,
I don't know.
Those guys. A couple. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
Very good artists, great artists, but you know, just you're drawing them, and it's not your thing. I don't know. It's I get it. It's probably tempting. Like somebody's like, "Hey, we're gonna do this, and you're gonna make a lot of money, and it's gonna get a lot of attention, and like, please do this." It's probably hard to turn down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, considering
sounds like Shitty Watchmen.
I mean, you know, I totally feel like if you were to buy anything else aside from the two of them, it just feels like you're buying a fan art book, kind of.
Oh, no, absolutely.
You know? So that's why it feels kind of wrong.
So you might as well buy our fan art book.
Because it's a legitimate, not...
Because we love the series.
It's made with love.
For real, though. I mean, that's... I think in the Multiversity interview I did, I talked about how, like, we want to exalt this thing and pay tribute to it by reducing it to its worst possible circumstances. And it still works, even in, like, filtered through the hands of seemingly incompetent nincompoops, it's still fucking amazing. Yeah. Like,
Shitty Watchmen has its own unique layers.
That's true.
Only because of the work that Alan Moore and specifically Dave Gibbons. Yeah. Like, for me, that the two things that if someone were to be so kind as to read our book, those are the two things that I would want them to take away from it. It's like that Dave Gibbons is just as important as Alan Moore, even though he never gets talked about. And that it's really unfortunate that DC is doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And I love DC Comics. Like, the reason I don't drink is because of Superman. Like, I love so much of the things that they stand for, which is why this is so much more.
Stood for, maybe?
I think that's a longer conversation, but I don't think it's... There have been multiple incarnations of DC that have been shitty.
Yeah.
Like, Mort Weisinger was a terrible human.
Okay.
He was not nice. He was the Superman group editor for a long time.
Got it.
He's the person who's responsible for Supergirl and Superboy and all the different shades of Kryptonite.
Crypto.
And Crypto and Bippo and Streaky and...
Streaky. Streaky.
I don't remember the horse's name.
Was it like...
It was Zeppo and Gummo.
the horse's name was like Scout or something.
I don't remember
like
the name.
Dash.
Sure, we'll go with that.
He sounds so awful.
They were really good, though. They're some of my favorite comics, and specifically the Lois Lane comics are amazing. Granted, they're super misogynist. But they're made with this weird crackling energy, and I think they transcend the gender role trappings of their time. But that's just my opinion. Specifically, though, DC's been shitty, and so has Marvel. Marvel's been shitty at multiple points in history, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that these characters and the world that they've built over the last 70-something years is like a weird pinnacle it's the weird pinnacle of storytelling, where it's because it's corporately manufactured and corporately kept in this stasis of things can't really change. It's like a giant brick wall that keeps getting built by generations upon generations, and you get to see the ebb and flow of the type of bricks people use and how our morality changes and how we view what an idea of a hero is, which goes back to our friend Zack Snyder, where his idea of a hero is like, you can't be one, which is so sad and shitty.
It really is.
So this is all more or less a tangent. I just mean this in terms of, I'm disheartened by what DC is doing, and specifically with The Watchmen right now, but there will be a time when they do great things, and the Watchmen legacy hopefully will just be like, man, that was a really dark hour. I can't believe they did that. Moving on.
Can I? All right, here's a question. Because this thought's popped into my head, and maybe you guys have noticed this and maybe not. Mm-hmm. But it feels like something about our current situation as a country.
To what are you referencing, Chuck?
Oh, you know.
I don't understand.
I have no idea. Yeah. These are
This
is recorded in Canada.
So. Right.
Yeah, Trudeau's great. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he's so handsome. I think, well, okay, it just feels like Watchmen's back in the cultural zeitgeist
in a weird way. In a real weird way.
And because, like, you know, things like the Doomsday Clock is trending on Facebook. It's like, what? Like, all right, I know what that means because of Watchmen, and it's not good. And that's like we're talking about the real one, not the one in the book. And do you guys think that is it like a political culture thing that it's sort of, is it like our 1984 but for comics? Is it
the darkest aspects of the 80s are coming back along with all the other retro stuff?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like to a certain degree that disconnect is more apparent than ever. Mm. And so, you know, people are going back and they're like looking through their real Watchmen. They're like, you know, this is so much more relevant now. Like, I mean, not as in like it wasn't back then, but I'm saying like there was kind of this. Like 4 years under Obama, I feel like we were fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, like, oh no, the world's burning down, and there might be a real alien invasion. If they are, they're like kidnapping people because Trump is such a terrible president.
Yeah, I don't know. If anything, though, that makes me feel better that people are looking back at Watchmen, because I feel like the reason we're in this situation specifically is that our cultural memory is so short, you know?
It's like, pretty short.
Like, nobody that lives in the U.S. right now was directly affected by the Holocaust. So it's really easy. Like, I'm here because my family was being hunted. Legitimately
mm-hmm.
hunted. And so they came here. And specifically, like, we're here because of Nazis. My dad, last time I was in Arizona, said the words to me, no, we shouldn't allow Syrian refugees in because they could be terrorists.
Mm.
And I was like, how hypocritical. You realize that I, as a human being, exist because of refugees. And just because those refugees are from a separate part of the... What? Like,
yeah,
what are you...
The cognitive dissonance is very... It has to create this sort of feedback loop of, like, denial. And it's a weird, weird, weird thing.
Or even just the fact that, like, to a certain degree, hate is cool? You know? Like, I think that
As long as it's ironic. I'm using air quotes.
I don't even think it's that. I think that there is a certain segment of society, specifically that are straight white men, who are looking for an identity and who see goose-stepping Nazis and are like, that's a club I can belong to, and they don't see it as, like, people actually getting massacred. They just see it as, like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna have a hat and it's gonna be cool. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a genuine, and then there's degrees of that too, of people being like, the Mexicans are taking our jobs. I'm like, no they're not, dude. No they're not. And then because you're afraid of losing employment or whatever, you vote for somebody that maybe doesn't completely align with your social values. And I think these are all in Watchmen. Like, it's that weird us versus them. The idea of compromise, the idea of never compromising, the greater
Nixon's,
good.
Well, Nixon's in the book, and Nixon's on his third term.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
And that's, you know, last time I checked in the Constitution, you can't have a third term in America. You can have two. Hmm. But in this version, between Dr. Manhattan and the police riots and every other form of unrest that is, you know, screwing up the country, they're like, well, we need to have Nixon again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is such a, you know, and that guy was one of the worst presidents. I say one of because, you know, jury's out. Jury's out on this new guy. So, like, that means that he was able to spin that into, you know, authoritarian control.
Yeah.
And I feel like that paranoia and that, which is something I didn't really understand when I was reading it as a kid. But now when I read it, I'm like, yeah, this is like every page has a punctuation mark on this, like, this feeling of, like, you, they're coming to get you. This, yeah. If it's a mask killer, if it's nuclear war, Russians, everyone. An alien.
Gang members with top knots.
An alien is going to crash land your rock concert and kill you. Like, something bad is coming, and you are in trouble, and the superheroes can't help you. In fact, some of them actively hate you. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's a super dark book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even the ending is like, you know, what is the victory at the end? There's almost none.
Global peace, but at what cost?
But at what cost?
Yeah.
And you know, it ends at the perfect moment, and because other it doesn't answer that question. But yeah, it's like it's still that's like the you get the book is made up of tiny, tiny little panels. Until the end, when you get about, eight solid pages of just dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers. And, edit that out, Aristotle. 8 pages of puppies. Puppies upon puppies. Just a big old puppy pile. So good. Anyway, it's just it's a whole thing. So basically, we're living in Watchmen right now. Yeah. And
well, don't you think these themes are kind of just have always been there throughout human history, and I think maybe Watchmen, especially for its time, just really told that story very well, and it still echoes with, you know, this current generation. Mm-hmm. What are we 30 years on from the original? Yeah. And it's still relevant.
Especially when viewed in context of the fact that so much of comics didn't deal with that on a nuts and bolts level. Like, sure, Jack Kirby, like, went over there and killed Nazis and came back and was like, I'm gonna make a book about killing Nazis. But it wasn't about the inner angst of Steve Rogers as he impaled someone on his shield. Yeah. It was like punching Hitler. It was a popcorn version of that.
Yeah.
And for Watchmen, the reason why it's still talked about is because it was created almost in direct opposition to everything else that existed within the industry at the time.
Okay.
And I think that just the feat of getting it made as uncompromising as it is in the industry that existed in 1985 is insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Yeah. That's something. Context is a big thing.
Like
the context in which it was created. That's something that's hard to put yourself in. It's hard to put yourself in that mindset.
Mm.
I feel like when people watch, like, you know, you go to Cinespia and people are watching old movies that like a, you know, and they're laughing at, like, they're not jokes. They're, you know, somebody says something, they go, ha ha.
Yeah,
you know,
somebody says the reefer.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're not, it's a weird attitude of, like, trying to be, like, better than the thing you're enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
But Watchmen's better than everyone.
Which is why, the thing, it's so funny, in the interview, there's a quote in the front of the book that says, and I'll read it right now, it says, and they'd got this new contract worked out, which meant that when the work went out of print, then the rights would revert back to us, which sounded like a really good deal, Alan Moore. And that quote is from an interview that he gave maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And in the interview, he was talking about specifically how DC came to him because DC had the editorial foresight to be like, you as an individual can take us into a new direction. You can take us away from this stagnant superhero culture into something else. We don't even know what that is, but you can do it. What do you want to do? And he, you know, obviously wanted to make this, but I think that there's something to be said for if he hadn't been so poorly treated by them, what else would we have gotten?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, would there have been not a second Watchmen in something like that, but what if did he want to do like his next big project after this with Big Numbers, which is like this weird book that nobody's ever read because it never got put into trade because it never finished, and it's about gentrification in England when this strip mall is starting to be built, and it was going to be a 12 issue maxi series drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz. 2 issues of it came out, and Bill Sienkiewicz and Alan Moore had a huge falling out because Alan Moore made Bill Sienkiewicz redraw a splash page of a coffee cup 5 times. And he was like, I'm no, fuck you, no, stop making me draw this coffee cup. So they had a huge falling out. Then Kevin Eastman, the Teenage Mutant Turtles co-creator, tried to get it up again on its feet, and he hired Al Columbia, who was Bill Sienkiewicz's assistant at the time, to finish the book. They did a third issue, which then Al Columbia lost his mind and burned the entirety of the issue because he was like, you're not hiring me to be Al Columbia. You're hiring me to be Bill Sienkiewicz Jr. I'm like, yeah, yes, literally. You're his assistant. We want you to draw like him so we can finish this book. And I wonder if that book or subsequent books that he would have done, had they not been so steamrolled by DC and had given him this crazy paranoid, because he legitimately is a paranoid person. And I think in some cases, maybe unwell because of the paranoia. What would have happened? Like, could we just treat people nice and just, if you let him have the rights to Watchmen, it's not like he was going to take it away. Or if he did, it would go somewhere else, and then that company would make a shitload of money. It's like, come on, I get it. It's a capitalistic commercial industry. I understand that you don't want to lose that money, but at the same time, there has to be some sense of vision of, like, is the money that we're making off this worth less than the potential of reaping the benefits of an entire new genre that would have spawned off of... Because, I mean, Vertigo was basically made to be the Watchmen factory. Like, we're going to try and get another Watchmen. We're going to make comics that aren't superhero stuff. But imagine what would have happened if Alan Moore would have been working on those books. And not that I don't think anybody can make anything as good as Alan Moore. I think there are tons of people that can make amazing comics. But at that period in time, with that guy, I don't know, man. It's like, there's only one Elvis. There's only one fucking The Beatles. I don't know.
No, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it's kind of like, it's like I was saying earlier, like, do you make, you know, the artist is like, no more books, no more, you know, when I say the artist, I mean more, and Gibbons, you know, they're like, no more books, this is a self-contained, one and done, or 12 and done, or whatever.
Yeah.
We've done what we wanted to do. And then somebody's like, hey, we're going to make more of those, but different, and not as good, and without any of your input. And it's like, that's so disrespectful.
Well, it's also
so
like
unbelievably disrespectful.
If he was cool with making it, then we wouldn't be having this conversation at all.
Right.
Like, if you read the original Amazing Fantasy 15 that Ditko did, it's crazy how dark that thing is. Like, his uncle, it's like 15 pages. His uncle dies. He makes this costume. It's super dense. And like, if I read that, it would be so different at the time. I'd be like, what the fuck is this? And then they made an empire on that character. And I'm sure that that was the gut instinct of DC at the time, too. Of like, we could make an empire on Rorschach. Just make Rorschach comics forever. But, like, yeah, but there's something to be said for... We still talk about Citizen Kane as the greatest movie ever made. Because it's one movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
But I do kind of want to revisit the Citizen Kane universe, the Kaneverse. I kind of want to know what's going on with
his
grandkid.
Yeah, or, like, does his grandkid love sleds too?
Yeah.
There was a movie about Xanadu.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was called Xanadu.
Xanadu.
Do you guys have a different opinion of Watchmen now that we've put this book out and people have reacted fairly positively to it? Like, were you anticipating this?
I didn't know what to anticipate. I mean, I'm just kind of new to the comics world, so I'm just along for the ride. Even just putting the book together was a personal just to see if I could do it. And especially because it's like over 370 pages, I just want to see if I could tackle it and get something that worked. And I was just even surprised when our first copy showed up how good it looked for, you know, the method that we used to put it together. So yeah, I don't know what else to. I mean, the artwork, and I'm curious what everybody else got out of it, but just, you know, having to go over the originals with such a, you know, with a magnifying glass, you know, when doing my own copy of it, was just neat to pick up on, like, all the coats. How interesting, you know, he draws these coats and everyone has these very similar, like, high collars and that was kind of neat. And even
a lot of coats.
Yeah, a lot of coats.
A lot of coats.
I draw more coats now. You know, because
do you really?
Yeah, definitely. I love them. And I think another thing, you know, when I was putting the book together and I would look at like the chapter I did on the computer and there'd be small thumbnails of it. And I'm like, wow, I can see this still has a graphic design to it. And it really works, even, you know, looking at like an inch tall.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed. And so that holds up even somebody as like kind of like a bad photocopier version and then reduced really small. You know, the basic, you know, spotting of blacks and layout of the panels is still very strong, which is just so impressive. Yeah.
I think for me, because I like you, Colby, I'm sort of new to the comic world too, whereas where like I've been used to just doing comics, you know, based on self-deprecation, not really writing stories. And when I agreed to do the project, or like I hopped on the bandwagon, I noticed, I think we were talking about this at Malachi's studio too, where all the bodies are drawn, like you can see full bodies per panel, like if that makes sense, you know? Whereas, you know, I'm used to just either for my comics, just drawing the face or, you know, just like an entire panel is just the expression of the face, like avoiding bodies in general.
Yeah.
But
super close-ups.
Yeah. Super close-ups. Yeah. Big fan. And you know, I don't know, drawing these, like, you know, doing this, this book, it kind of made me look at myself as an illustrator and, I don't know. I guess I'm not that scared to do full bodies anymore, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's cool. Yeah.
So this was kind of a learning process for me too, doing everything. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, yes, it's high concept and yes, it's got a dumb name and hopefully we'll sell copies and whatnot. But also I think that at the base level, like it's just all of us being like, we're gonna study this. Yeah. This is a really big thing, and we should all.
Anybody that wants to improve their sequential art skills, just start with this, and anything else that you think works really well, and it's worth the effort. You get something out of it.
Yeah. Hope people aren't turned off by how serious we took this.
Yeah, for something like that's so silly, we did. I took it really seriously. I mean,
you took it real seriously, man. You spotted the fuck out of those blacks.
Well, because it was fascinating
to
me.
It's so cool. Yeah.
But just in general, like, because this is a book I've been reading since I was in junior high. You know, there's little things that are in panels that I'd never, ever, ever, ever seen before. And they're there. They've been there forever. They've been there since the 80s. And I never, ever saw them. Just little stuff, like little symbolic allusions. Mm-hmm. You know, every time you saw it, like a happy face, I would, like a smiley with the blood, I would text Dave. Like, I found one.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
There's this, like, visual language and these motifs that aren't accidental at all. Everything's completely planned out. Even in my, I did chapter 5 and that's got some pirate stuff that's pretty cool and, you know, which I didn't appreciate at first, but now I, you know, appreciate more. I mean, obviously it's all great, but, even just like, so there's a scene where a shark attacks the pirate guy because of course, and the guy takes part of his ship and stabs the shark in the left eye so that there's blood on the shark's left eye, and it's mimicking the smiley face button. And then later, when the I guess Ozymandias or his buddy or the tiger or whatever is calling the police to tell them where Rorschach is, and they say, "What are you saying, Rorschach?" And like the page before that, the guy's eating raw shark, like the pirate guy.
Yeah.
And it's like I never seen that before. Like I mean, I've read this book a lot of times.
That's deep.
And there's so many little connections and.
Yeah, for me, it was...
It's nuts.
For me, it was... And I think you might have actually pointed out to me when I was drawing it, is in the first issue when Rorschach goes into the bar and breaks that guy's fingers, the smoke on the ceiling of the bar is forming a smiley face with two lamps. The lamps are the eyes, and there's like a cigarette ring that's making the smile for the smiley face. Like, it's insane. It's in-fucking sane.
Yeah, I'm like trying to find it. But yeah, it's so weird. I mean, it's not weird. It's actually it's
no,
just,
it's masterful.
Just yeah, it's just
and
amazing.
It honestly makes me really. Like, reading the book makes me really excited to make 9-panel grid comics. Like, basically everything I've been doing since we've been doing this project has just been like, I'm going to put 9-panel grids in everything. And thankfully, Nicole's into it too, so I keep writing these 9-panel grids, and she's like, yeah, this is great. And then we could do this in this panel, and it'll be awesome. 9-panel grids forever!
It's a pretty good Nicole.
Thanks, impression. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good, right? Yeah. Do you guys have a preferred panel count for a page? Like, you have, like, I really hate drawing long panels, so I always put 6 panels on a page, or I don't know.
No, I think for the work I'm doing, I tend to condense more. Like, I want to fit more story onto one page. Mm-hmm. As I guess the feeling is, if someone owned this page, there would just be a lot going on, I think is maybe the thought behind it. But yeah, and then the opposite would be is ever, you know, if you go to a full page illustration, it really has impact.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't think I really do anything. I like, some variation in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, I do like 4 panels.
Mm.
I like doing the 4-panel stories or like the illustrative approach where you have just one page and it pretty much says it all. Like, I do talk a lot with the people that I'm close to, but outside of that comfort zone, I don't really talk much. And that's the same as, like, how I present myself to, you know, like, the people viewing my work. It's, like, saying very little but saying a lot at the same time, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, my thing.
I think, as far as panel count, I don't really have, like, a preference. I think the interesting thing for me was, here's the thing that I kept thinking of. And when I was drawing, like, I was looking at it and I was kind of like stunned at how ridiculously complex even a small single panel out of 9 was. Like, it was between the sense of place and the perspective, every single detail was so, like, everything was basically perfect. You know, mm-hmm. everything's
yeah, no
formally perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything's there. So cutting those corners was very interesting because it's like, all right, well, which corners do I cut here?
You mm-hmm. know?
I'm not doing a 1-for-1 reproduction. I'm doing sort of my interpretation mm-hmm. based on, you know, this photorealistic, let's call it photoreal. I mean, it's not. But
yeah,
it,
yeah,
you know,
I know what you're saying.
For comics, it's like.
Yeah. On the comic spectrum.
Yeah. It's like, wow.
Yeah. The only thing further is Alex Ross.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. Mm-hmm. It's definitely up there. So you have, like, you know, so how do you pare it down? And then in doing that, there were little things that were happening that I started to feel like stylistically is like, oh, this feels good. Like this, the way I drew this sleeve or something, mm-hmm. or the way I drew this clothes wrinkle or the sharpness of this elbow or whatever. Like mm-hmm. stuff like that starts to, like, you start to do it and it starts to come out and it's like, oh, I would like to do more of that or something, I don't, mm-hmm. you know, because you have this amazing, immaculate guide. And then it's like, OK, how do I, almost like if you had a life drawing class or something and you're like reinterpreting something that's very, very real
yeah.
and detailed.
Yeah. The minimalization of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, when you start to Yeah. And, like, you know, that was really fun. Like, I had a really good time just sort of like stripping something down and seeing, you know,
yeah.
what would come out of it.
Yeah.
Comics. I love comics, guys.
Are we going to do another shitty something else?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, we've kind of been talking about it a little bit in the shitty Watchmen group text, in the Crime Busters group text. Do you guys have proclivities one way or another?
I don't. You know, it's hard because there's not many other books that are kind of this good that fit this mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it obviously is as good, but like if we did Killing Joke, between the 11 of us that actually worked on this, I think that book is around 44 pages or something mm-hmm. where we could maybe actually sit down for 4 hours, each take 4 pages and just be done in that,
yeah.
that moment.
Yeah.
That could be kind of fun. I don't think anything will ever be as difficult as the one we just did. I
mean, yeah, no shit, right?
I was, yeah, 28 pages at least,
yeah.
You know, per issue and then the cover and all that. I kind of would be curious to do, you know, some Alex Ross work just because it isn't not line work.
Yeah.
And I think he has strong design sense. So I think it would be fun to interpret, you know, and color down into like high contrast, black and white would be kind of fun. So, you know, that's maybe a direction we could do or especially if somebody, you know, wants to do something I've never even read, I think would be fascinating. So,
We should take this live action and we should just do shitty Zack Snyder movies.
That's too many movies.
It's his entire oeuvre.
Yeah, I don't know.
I, that being said, I don't hate the Dawn of the Dead remake.
All right.
I enjoyed that. Yeah,
yeah, it's not that bad.
I don't hate the Watchmen movie.
Oh, wow.
It's nowhere great as an adaptation or anything, but I just don't hate it. I didn't go in like you're, you know, ruining, you know, this is sacrilege even making this, but I'm mildly entertained by it. The pretty colors, things like that. It has a weird soullessness to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It has no point of view.
Yeah. But in a weird way, that's kind of fascinating because it's so pretty, but it's like not a veneer, but yeah, it's like a shell of a film.
Mm-hmm.
But I can still get something out of that for what that is.
Mm.
I'm sure that's not the intention.
It's the the most reverent, least reverent thing.
It really is.
Lavishly reverent.
Alluring, kind of.
But only on a surface level.
Yeah, exactly.
But it means nothing.
Two-dimensional.
It has no...
More two-dimensional than the comic.
Than our shitty Watchmen.
It really is his shitty Watchmen version of it, because it is, I like the visuals.
So
and that's
expensive.
Him hanging his...
Yeah,
but with none of the, he took none of the, I mean, just because you can copy what a panel looked like in camera, cool, you did it. I recognize that panel. That's the feeling I kept when I was watching it. I was going, oh, I recognize that panel. Oh, I recognize that panel. Oh, cool, Rorschach's a karate expert now. Oh, I recognize that panel. You know, like it was just like, it was weird to watch that movie. I didn't love it, but I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. I was just confused by it. It was like, why?
It's so funny. Last night I was watching Spawn, the live action adaptation of
Michael Jai White.
Michael Jai White, yeah. And it kind of felt, I mean, it's nowhere near as, I mean, I hate the Watchmen movie, like with a burning passion, but they put money into it. They tried their best. Their best is a weird, completely missing the point thing, but they tried. The Spawn movie is interesting to me on the same level, where it reads or it feels like a Wikipedia article of somebody who had read Spawn. Like
it's like Spawn abridged.
Yeah, it's like, all right, and then Al Simmons dies and he loves his wife, and then he comes back and he's a fucking hell demon thing, and I don't know, there's a gun, and then there's a little clown guy, and really bad special effects, and I don't know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
And, like, there's no real three-act structure to it. It's literally just those first six issues kind of molded into 2 hours, kind of. It's really weird. And there's no point of view. It's all very... It's like, confrontationally 1997. Like, it hurts the amount of, like, corn that's in that fucking movie. And that being said, though, I like that movie more because it's so poorly executed. And honestly, because you can feel Michael Jai White really giving it his all.
He's a national treasure.
He really is. And I don't feel like anybody in the Watchmen movie gave it their all. They were all like,
I don't think they got it either.
I don't know if that's...
No. Not the deeper meaning.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like that... There's parts of it... that there's little things that'll happen in that movie that I go, almost. Like, I'm like, oh, you know, Patrick Wilson... So close. Almost got it, buddy. Like, and I love that guy. He's a good actor.
I'm not saying he's a bad actor either.
But I'm saying it's like, you know, you're just dancing around it. You're like almost there. Basically, every single problem with that movie is like the director. Like the direction, the thing. Okay, now you're going to do this. Like, and the reverence to the text when there's no way to be completely faithful to the text. You can't adapt The closest you could maybe do is a 12-episode HBO miniseries, which might happen.
Yeah, I keep hearing,
too.
Yeah, I don't want to.
But I'm like, yeah. And again, it's, you know, it doesn't take away the actual book, and, you know, it doesn't, it'll never replace anything. The closest to replacing the actual book is ours, Shitty Watchmen.
Go buy it. Panel
just as shitty
panel.
As any other adaptation.
Yeah, no, yeah,
it's,
yeah,
but it's
real.
Made
yeah.
with true love.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's, you know, I remember when I was, like, the trailers were very exciting, and I was like, maybe it'll be good. And I was looking at things, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's... It felt like it was going to be a comment on superhero movies, the way that
well, I think they were the trying comic, to yeah. do that, but it just wasn't.
No, it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was like, well, Jackie Earle Haley's looks pretty good.
Yeah.
These certain, you know, that wow, that looks exactly like Dr. Manhattan. Like, there he is. And
weirdly,
Vietnam.
Though, weirdly, too yeah. much like him, right? Like, his eyes were, it's like he's got the Dave Gibbons eyelid things. Like,
yeah.
That didn't make any sense in real life.
No, not really.
Not
it's
really.
Weird because it's like a half-assed, full-assed movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's right. like they did like everything panel for panel, but it's like,
yeah.
know, something's missing.
It's because it's, I think, Colby, did you say it where they it's all visually oriented and but
yeah.
none of the subtext
yeah.
is there and
none of the
yeah. I don't remember one of us sent of it.
All, yeah. The shell is well replicated, but
yeah.
there is nothing inside of it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's eerie, actually. Because
yeah.
it's, I don't know if I've seen anything that's that
yeah.
visually, and it's visually strong because of the original book.
Have you seen the Psycho remake? The shot for shot Psycho remake?
No.
That's kind of how I feel about that. Except I think that's done on purpose. That, like, Gus Van Sant remade Psycho literally shot for shot just with other actors as a means of saying, like...
We should never do
this. We should never do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think. I've never been able to find him in an interview saying that, but
that
kind of
makes
sense. Weird.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why? I mean, I feel like there might be even a... This feeling of, you know, if somebody's going to do this... Somebody's going to ruin it. I'm going to ruin it. I even feel like that's a thing Zack Snyder said.
He did, yeah.
Except he didn't say the word ruin.
Yeah.
He said adapt, but he
yeah.
meant ruin.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
we all know. Because I think it was an interview with him where Zack Snyder was like, you know, yeah, I didn't want to do it, and like, it can't be done. But then it kept coming up to me, and they kept bringing it up, and it's like, well, if somebody's going to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a step. Like, I'm going to make it my thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to honor the book. And I'm going to... I love this book. Like, it's a weird...
Yeah. There was an interview with him from that time where he was like, the person before me that had it was Terry Gilliam. And all I could, like, think at night was that I needed to protect this movie from the Terry Gilliams of the world.
Right.
And part of me is like, you know what? I actually kind of agree with you, sort of.
Yeah.
But also, Terry Gilliam on his worst day is 50 times the filmmaker that you are.
Yeah, that's true. And it's almost like...
More interesting film.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
It's like if Zack Snyder was in love with, like, let's personify Watchmen's like this beautiful woman or something. And he's like, she's the most beautiful and the best. And then she's like, excuse me. He's like, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I just want to look at you.
Yeah, yeah.
You're so beautiful.
Put you on the pedestal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're so important. She's like, well, actually, no.
Yeah.
Don't ruin this. Like, it's weird.
It really is.
Yeah.
Because it's all the stuff. You see a trailer and you're like, wow, so much of it looks like the book. This is going to be good. Mm-hmm. Even Silk Spectre's costume is, you know, it makes sense for real life.
Sort of.
Like paper mache sort of. Watchmen. It's like a pinata, and we're just beating it to death looking for candy, and there's nothing
in
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas ours is the reverse. It's like, all of the.
Has some soul to it somehow, because maybe we actually get it, and that just affects it on a metaphysical level or
it's
something.
It's like all stuff, but no shell.
Yeah.
It's like everywhere.
Yeah.
But when you flip through it now, I was like, ooh, what's that book? And that just shows you how strong that original design is. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. It looks strong to me.
I think it's an interesting comment on what the book means to different people just based on the way that they reinterpret Dave Gibbons. Like, I'm looking at Malachi's pages right now, and he did something really interesting where he just deleted the original Dave Gibbons artwork and redrew the panels, but kept Alan Moore's panel borders and, or not his panel borders, but kept the panel borders and Alan Moore's original dialogue and word balloons. And it's really weird.
Yeah.
Like, and his feels completely, because his are like crappy drawings, but they're expressionistic and they communicate very well. Where mine are like almost like weird impressionist studies, where mine, especially towards the end, mine's like, fuck it.
Yours are almost the loosest.
Yeah, they really
certainly
are.
Certainly panel-wise.
Oh, yeah.
I know when I put it together. Yeah. I keep it on the page.
Yeah, mine are just kind of like, fuck it, I'm moving through this as fast as possible, mm-hmm. and like what comes out, comes out. And some of it I think is actually really fun, and then some of it is real bad looking. But that's the point, right? Shitty
yeah.
Watchmen.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're not doing it to replace it. We're not doing it to say better than, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a different, we're saying it because we love it, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's just a thing. I mean, when you somehow it was brought up to me, I thought, yes, this is a really funny, dumb, smart thing. And I completely 100% understand what it's like to do. It's like being a band and doing a cover song.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not replacing the old song. You're putting your touch on it. You're putting your fingerprint on it. And in a respectful way, hopefully. And that's, nobody gets mad at a band. And you're not a cover band. You're
yeah.
not a band. Mm-hmm. That's not all you do is,
yeah.
well, what's the top 40 hit of the today? And soullessly play a formation or whatever.
And that's the,
it's just, you know, you pick a song that you like. And you're like, that's the song we're going to cover.
That's something that, as a creator, kind of gives me pause, too. Because it would be really easy to just make an entire line of shitty books and go to conventions and make fuckloads of money,
yeah.
which is not something I'm interested mm-hmm. in at all. And I think the analogy of a cover band is really apropos, because right now the industry is plagued with people that just draw Deadpool fan art, and it bums me out.
Yeah.
Like, I have no qualms against it. If that's what you want to do, I just, it's not for me, man. I don't want to fucking do that shit.
I think I just can't put myself in those shoes, mostly because, you know, if, like, where's the self in it, I guess? Like, mm-hmm. what part of it is fulfilling? And I'm not saying that, I'm just saying, like, specifically doing the same, like, say, like, Deadpool, like, over and over again, just, like, saying funny things or saying, you know, whatever. For like,
it's Deadpool in a Mickey Mouse costume.
It's like, what part, you know, where is the line drawn where you're kind of just making it to make money?
Oh yeah,
like if that's the case, then...
Well, especially like you do a lot of anime conventions.
Yeah,
and that
I
is
do.
Like there I it's
do.
It's there's a lot of people at anime conventions that make their entire booth just off of making insert random manga or fucking
I mean,
anime
I,
thing.
I don't know. For me, it's like I do fan art of anime because I fucking love anime. I love Japanese animation. But I'm never like doing it like, and a lot of like other artists, it's the same way where we're not doing it in the same style. We're putting it our own spin on it,
mm-hmm.
or like, you know, kind of trying to communicate our love for something, you know, just like connecting with people or like whatever. Mm-hmm. But like I think that's different from, you know, drawing like other characters from other animes or other shows in like Dragon Ball Z style, like over and over and over again. There's like no voice to it,
mm-hmm.
I feel. And it's more like, you know, for the other artists to think about, it's like, how can you find this fulfilling? It's like,
well, it's also like, I mean, I get it on just a ones and zeros level. Like, if you're trying to tour mm-hmm. and you're trying to do conventions, I understand, like, I need to sell 50 Gundam prints in order
yeah.
to fucking
yeah,
pay
yeah,
for
yeah.
this table. And no one's going to buy 50 prints of my original character or my, you know, mm-hmm. six-page comic. Like, I need to make the money.
Yeah.
So on that level, I understand the necessity of it, but I don't know, man. I've been doing this for a while. I don't sell fan art. It can be done. Well, there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. I mean, I sell both.
No, and I think a lot
like,
of people,
you know.
A lot of people do. A lot of people
yeah.
use it, too, as a means of, like, they put their giant, you know, Darth Vader painting up, and that gets people over to the table, and then they say, hey, if you like Darth Vader, you'll like my comic, which is called...
Varth Dater.
It's really good. It's about a young slave kid on a desert planet who grows up and becomes Space Hitler.
Yeah.
You'll love it.
Well, some people just aren't, they're not storytellers, they're not designers
yeah,
even.
Yeah, that's
they're,
true.
They're
that's
just
true.
Illustrators, and someone else has designed the bones,
yeah.
have built the skeleton, and they just want to do pretty paintings.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but, you know, that's why it only has that certain amount of, you know, depth to it.
I think that's a good point, too, because I think it's a good point. However, there are so many people that could be making their own stuff and don't because fan art is so much more money. Yeah. Like it really, like Nicole sure. and I have to hustle at shows
yeah.
to make money. And we do, but it would be so much easier if that book had Batman or Deadpool or fucking Catwoman, you name it, and we would be making a shit, we would make a shitload more money.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, there's also the argument of like, oh, fan art is kind of just practice for like what they really want to do. They're just like, mm-hmm. you know, the characters, everything's already done, mm-hmm. composition's already done. They're just practicing. But, you know, that's like almost the same thing as like, would you sell like your practice sketches at cons? You know, yeah. like it's.
Would
it's,
you?
Kind Me? Of yeah. similar.
I don't really
like
do
that.
Practice sketches.
You're I just, like every sketch.
If anybody's buying, sure.
yeah, yeah. No,
from the first stroke, perfection.
It's more just that, like, I've, over the course of however long I've been making comics, which is probably longer than I want to admit, I don't really do warm-up drawings. I don't really get in the headspace. I think, for me, that stuff is wasted. Like, I want all of those lines to be on the paper that is going to be in the book.
I want it raw.
More just it's
time saver.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I make a finished drawing of Captain America as a warm-up drawing, mm-hmm. that's 200, 300, 400 lines. It's not going to be on the actual page. Mm-hmm.
Do you not doodle? Do you not do other sketches like in a sketchbook for fun, things like
I
that?
I do, yeah. Mm. I do. But that's usually not when I sit down to work, I'm working. Yeah. And then that's mm-hmm. like I'm out and about and I'm on the train and I literally can't do something. Yeah. So I'm going to draw this person over there.
Oh, yeah.
There's also the selfish part of me that's like, all of these sketchbooks are going to be put into art books one day. Which is, you know, just my ego coming out.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally get that too. Because then there are some pieces where I just get down and I draw, but then some that I really have to, like, have to do the preliminary sketches and then just, like, a bunch of drafts over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But I've realized that the ones that I do kind of just sit down and then just get it straight into drawing, I've kind of sketched throughout the course of, like, I guess, like, my life or something like that, where, like, I'd be like, oh, I did this, like, little chubby golem dude, like, over and over again. Let's turn that into a thing. And then that thing gets turned into, like, you know, just, like, bam, illustration or, like,
right,
bam,
right.
mini comic or something
right.
like that.
Hmm.
So it comes out in that way, too. Like, my doodles become...
Come other things.
Yeah, other
yeah.
things.
Yeah. That's true. When I'm in the beginning... So you're talking to me now, like, 250 pages into this book. So, no, there is no other drawing. It's just working on the book.
Yeah.
But...
I'm the same way now. It's just... Yeah. Unless I have a concept for something,
yeah.
then I'll, like, okay, I need to jot this down. So in the future, when I want to work on something, what have I already come up with?
Right, right.
Yeah. It's rarely at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I do lots of little, like... Like notes almost, where like I'll be working on a page and then I'll hear something or something will occur to me and I'll draw like a little face.
A mental tangent.
yeah. Like a, oh, right, yeah, dude, guy with horns and seven teeth. Yeah, I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
And then inevitably I'll like draw that in another sketchbook and be like, oh, yeah, the horn guy with seven
yeah, yeah.
teeth.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. Yeah. It's not like sometimes it's just not so broken down as to like, say, like, because for me, I went to art school. It's like, not so broken down where there's a preliminary sketch, then there's the less shittier version of it, and then there's like, you know, whatever many steps. It's yeah. usually just like it's like random shit put together in one.
Right, right.
And back to Shitty Watchmen, I think a lot of us just drew straight in ink.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Well, you did all yours digitally, right?
Yeah, because I didn't want to scan it.
Smart.
Smart. Smart.
Yeah. I did very loose pencils. First.
Mm-hmm.
But when I say loose, I mean just like sort of sketched out figures.
Like guide marks almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there wasn't like, you know.
General blocking.
I didn't really draw any faces. I didn't really draw any. I did not have the confidence to go straight to ink. And also, I became very interested in like the geometry of the, you know. I mean, I draw, but I feel like primarily I'm probably a designer. So mm-hmm. that. Seeing how those shapes could play to, and where tangents happened and like where, you know, like angles.
Yeah, like
and
the
stuff.
Figures it, within the context.
Yeah, it was really, and how they would move from panel to panel and like how you could show movement was, all that stuff was fascinating. So like sitting there with the pencils like, and doing sort of like this sort of really loose thing was like really fun. And then inking it was even, you know, okay, which lines are thick? Where's the, mm-hmm. you know, how do mm-hmm. we draw these wrinkles? Yeah.
It, you know, did it make you want to make comics afterwards? I mean, you do make comics, yeah. but I mean, like, were you, because you've shown me scripts and stuff before of, like, right. your big comic project that you've been kind of, like, you know, working on and off for a while. Like, did, yeah. after you finished this, were you like, I'm going to do this?
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, there's whether or not it's related at all to Shitty Watchmen, I had an idea pop into my head that would be smaller, more manageable than the alien invasion thing. But I don't know.
Would it be a slice of life comic where you made a shitty comic about making shitty Watchmen?
No. I don't even know if I want to get into like the premise.
Yeah,
of
no,
it,
you don't have to.
But it's like some images popped into my head, and then a character popped into my head, and then jokes popped into my head, and then I was like, oh shit, okay, that could be cool. Like,
starts to write itself, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's when you know. I feel like that's when something's could be something. It's like when the answers to questions you didn't even have start popping up. And you're like, oh, right, he's got an ex-wife, of course. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, and then... You know,
oh, he's got
I mean?
A third nipple, of course.
Right. Well, it's not, it's very, I mean, it's just a very human story.
Mm-hmm.
Very human story. Anyway, so, yeah, it was good enough that I made a sketch and then I texted Nicole. I was like, hey, look what I did. So,
the ghost in all of our podcasts, Nicole.
Yeah, no. Well, no, she gave me the stamp of approval, so I'm like, all
right. Oh, she was like, you should make this comic?
Yeah, it's like, moving forward.
Good.
Nicole approves.
Good. Nice. Good. What are we at, Aristotle?
Hour 10.
I think that sounds great. Where can people find you guys on the interwebs, my friends?
I guess at Colby Bluth or ColbyBluth.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For me, it'd be like at Emily Vo, EmilieVo. And I'm mostly on Instagram. I mean, I do have a Twitter account, but I have nothing much to say.
So you can find me. My website is chuckkerr.com. It's all my mostly just design stuff. And you can find me on Instagram. It's just my name, Chuck Kerr. And then I run Meltthology, which is the monthly comics zine drawing night here at Meltdown Comics every third Tuesday. Which is how I know pretty much everybody here, except for you, stranger.
Yeah, I'm a stranger.
You're a new person. Don't trust you.
I'm a newbie.
Yeah. You should come. The next one is
Tuesday.
February 21st. Yeah.
Sounds
and that's
tight.
Issue number 30.
Damn. Are we going to sell Shitty Watchmans?
Huh?
Are we going to sell Shitty Watchmans at Meltthology?
Sell them?
Yeah.
Sure.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, do whatever you want to do.
Dude, I'm going to bring Watchmans and be like, hey, bros. Hey, bros. You want some watch mams? Yeah. We all made this together.
No, it's. I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think...
that doesn't sound good.
No, yeah, there's a siren outside.
Yeah. What do you call it? Yeah, so 30. We've done it 30 months in a row.
That's so crazy.
This month. It's kind of insane.
It's crazy.
We have had a longer run than some, like, you know, DC 52 comics at this
yep.
point.
Yep.
Like, or whatever.
Yeah, for
or,
real.
You know, whatever they call the I don't know.
Yeah,
the
just
new
ragging
52.
On DC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, take that, jerks.
Take that, challengers of the unknown.
Yeah. No, the DC's fine. Whatever, it's fine.
If you'd like to find me, you can find me at heydavebaker.com or on the Shermstagram and Twitter at
the Hermstagram.
The Hermstagram at xdavebakerx.
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you want to, I was going to say pre-order, but the pre-orders have sold out. So if you want to order a regular Shitty Watchmen, you can order it on my website, heydavebaker.com, or at our co-publisher's website, proteinpress.com or proteinbooks.com?
Good question.
I believe it's proteinbooks. I think. I don't know. Aristotle's looking it up. He should know this. I don't know how you don't know this. Is it your website? What is it, baby girl? What is it? Nope. We're going to go books. I think it's proteinbooks.com.
Before we go, I actually have something for you.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Oh.
That's right.
Okay.
Big Papa.
Right.
So I was in a... I was in a bookstore in Seattle last year.
God. Oh!
And they had a sidewalk sale, and those were like $1.
Oh!
And I was like, I'm going to get those. I'm going to give them to Dave. I promptly left them in my friend's car in Seattle. And then a couple of days ago, I got a package.
Oh, nice.
He mailed
them down. So those
dude.
Are for you. Dude.
The question is, should I open these or not?
Don't do it. Actually, one of them's a little open.
Which
but,
one?
I don't know. It's probably like that much open.
What?
So, okay, so Dave's, we're nerding out over these vintage Topps Dick Tracy Warren Beatty.
This one's already
Beatty.
Open. This one's already open.
This one's already open.
I'm
going to
open it.
It's, you know, act of God. trading cards from the movie Dick Tracy.
Have we talked about how much I love this movie?
We've talked about Dick Tracy in general.
Okay.
So when I saw them, I immediately like thought of you. Nice. They're got some really good stuff in there.
Oh, man. These are so rad.
Yeah.
Hey, his faith restored. These captions are so good. Oh, man.
Good stuff.
Flat Top's final stand.
Oh, man.
I used to impersonate Al Pacino from this movie when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tracy.
Even when you were young, you were going places.
Oh, man. This is so rad. This is the nicest thing someone's given me in a long time.
Oh, there you go, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
It was a dollar.
Fuck
so.
Yeah. These are great.
Yeah.
Word.
Well, dude, thanks for, I mean, you know, not to, it's not like a thank you gift because
right.
I literally got them many months ago. But, you know, you put this whole thing together and it's like, you know, you make things happen. You make cool things happen, and I appreciate that.
I mean, I appreciate your kindness, but it's really Colby. Let's be
Colby
real.
Too makes cool things
well,
happen.
Well, you gathered everybody. Maybe the hardcover, you know, version, but it was, you know, it's just, it sounded like a good, bad idea.
That's the best thing yeah. you can ever do.
That's good, how Turtle started.
That's
Shitty
right.
Watchmen. We're going to build an empire on Shitty Watchmen.
Oh, man. They like our version, they love pizza, and they live in the sewer. Yeah.
Oh, man. Heroes in a watch shell. All right, let's call it. Thank you, dear friends, for both working on this book with me and doing this.
It's fun.
You got it, man.
Who watches The Shitty Watchmen?
We do.
We do, yeah. Apparently.
Apparently Patton Oswalt does, too.
It's true.
What's up, Patton?
I love you.
Zane. Comic at theactionhospital.com. Find me on Instagram at xDaveBakerX. Same on Twitter. And come find me on the Facebooks. Just Dave Baker. If you'd like to find the show, it's at meltcomics.com. And it's obviously named It's Pronounced Zine.